We're joined now by Dr. Stephen Hoagley, Associate Professor of Politics and International Relations at the University of Auckland's Faculty of Arts, for our weekly wrap-up of global politics. Noia, Dr. Stephen, and today we look at the future of the European Union, which is being questioned again. Why?
Good afternoon, Brian. Yes, the European Union is the largest economic entity in the world, collectively larger than either the United States or China. So its future is vitally important, not least because New Zealand is negotiating a trade agreement with the European Union. European Union leaders have met in Portugal last week. They are, some leaders are trying to strengthen the European Union. Other leaders are trying to weaken it. Now, this has been a long debate, whether the European Union should be a collective, a union, or should it just be a confederation that is a loose association of governments. And that issue has not been resolved. Certainly the pandemic has illustrated differences between the different members as to who should share the vaccine with the poor countries or with each other. Most recently, the Scots have voted. The Scottish National Party and a near majority in the Scottish Parliament. And this raises the question again, will Scotland make a bid to leave the Great Britain, so Great Britain will no longer be so great, and actually rejoin the European Union? Now, Boris Johnson says no, he's not going to allow a referendum, but it could be that popular sentiment and reconsideration will take the Scots to the polls. They may vote then to secede from Great Britain and join the European Union. That's a long way off. We're not going to be looking at this nearby. It's a lot of complications, but it's another illustration of the fact that the European Union is a troubled institution, and that it's going to take real political leadership to hold it together and keep it as a positive force in world affairs. Brian?
China in the spotlight again. What's the latest?
Well, the latest, you saw the latest. It was the tumbling rocket that passed over New Zealand, and it finally ended up in the Indian Ocean, thank heaven. But it illustrated the fact that Chinese have an extensive space program. They've retrieved rocks from the moon. They have rockets that are capable of circling the moon and going out into space. They're rivaling the United States. And those rockets, of course, also can have a military application. There is no doubt that the Chinese rockets could, if there were some kind of war, reach the United States and vice versa, of course. So we hope that everybody will keep calm and not move in that direction. But it does illustrate the fact that the Chinese have a different approach. They reckon that uncontrolled re-entry of their space junk is okay. We don't think so. We think that these large pieces should be controlled. They should be dropped down into the Pacific Ocean in an uninhabited area to the west of Easter Island, for example, near the Southern Ocean, where they were not going to cause any harm. But the Chinese indicate they are going to continue to send up missions into space, and the booster rockets will fall back and hopefully not hurt anybody, but they're not going to change their views in that regard. The other piece of news, Brian, I'll share with your listeners, is that we're well aware that the Chinese have a massive investment program in roads, ports, and communications facilities right throughout Central Asia. But we've taken our eye off Africa, and it turns out that thanks to the Australians, they're watching carefully what everything that China does, have been reporting that the Chinese are exploring West African ports. Now, these West African ports that range from Guinea to Cameroon, Ivory Coast, Ghana, and other places are quite close to the United States. And so the U.S. Think tanks have also been documenting the fact that there's some 46 different African ports on both sides of Africa, west and east, that the Chinese have some sort of financial construction or operational involvement with. So it could be that in addition to the controversies in Southeast Asia and South Asia and Central Asia, we're going to have to keep an eye on what the Chinese are doing in Africa in terms of providing military facilities that will extend the reach of the Chinese People's Liberation Army. So again, watch this China space. It may be the big news item in the coming decade.
Speaking of China, Dr. Stephen, New Zealand Parliament has accused China of severe human rights abuses. What has been the response?
Yes, this is the other big news item. Not only was the Parliament accusing China, but also the Prime Minister has made it very clear that she's going to speak out about China's human rights abuses. The Foreign Minister has said the same thing in public, in meetings as recently as 1 week ago at the China Business Council. What Parliament has done echoes what has also been done in the Netherlands, Canada, and the United Kingdom, and in the United States. Now, what New Zealand did pull its punches a little bit, and Labour said, okay, we'll go along with severe human rights abuses accusations, but we're going to take the word genocide out of the equation. The Green Party spokesperson was not happy about this, but I agree that genocide is a very specialized subject. It's highly emotional. It does require careful consideration. And so New Zealand has stepped back just a little bit. And that now the question is, how have the Chinese reacted? Now, Madam Wu Shi, the ambassador from China at the conference last week, chaired by Fran O'Sullivan, did push back and saying China has not abused human rights, and the usual statements from China, and hinted that if New Zealand persisted in accusing China, that there would be unfortunate repercussions for the relationship. But more recently, again, thanks to Fran Wild for pointing, O'Sullivan for pointing this out, the spokesperson from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of China, Mr. Wang Wenbin, has made an extensive statement on the 6th of May, and it's actually quite favorable. He praises New Zealand for the One China policy, for the 49 years of harmonious relationships, the firsts, that is, New Zealand sponsored China as a market economy and helped it get into the World Trade Organization, and continues to have a strengthened dialogue. So it looks like the voices right from the top are going to differentiate China, differentiate New Zealand from Australia, which is getting punishment in terms of increased tariffs and a lot of criticism from Beijing. Beijing seems to see New Zealand in a different light, is going to downplay the differences and emphasize the common points that China and New Zealand share and move forward. So that's good news in one respect. It may cause a little problem with Australia, because the Australians are going to ask, why is New Zealand getting the soft treatment when they're getting the hard-nosed treatment? So, again, the diplomats are going to have to talk this one through and make sure that New Zealand doesn't get out of step with the Western democracies, and that it isn't regarded as some sort of soft on China. I don't think it is, but that perception might be out there. And this, again, Brian, is something we're going to be talking about from time to time in our future conversations.
To the United States now, Dr. Stephen, and two new initiatives from President Joe Biden. What are they?
Yes, well, sticking with New Zealand, the Prime Minister has initiated this thing called the Christchurch Call. This is to take stock of how to reduce hate speech on the media, social media. She's been joined by the President of France. The two are co-hosting an anniversary meeting of the Christchurch Call. And the good news here is that President Joe Biden has indicated he will join. He will join in by video conference, of course, not in person. But swinging the weight of the United States behind the Christchurch Call, initiated by New Zealand and France, is certainly a diplomatic plus. and it will give a little bit more weight to this effort to reduce hate speech, to try to change attitudes towards violence, towards intolerance of minorities, and to perhaps achieve a slightly more peaceful world. Now, the other thing the United States did, which is rather interesting, Joe Biden has said he wants to suspend the patents on vaccines. The big pharmaceutical companies have pushed back and said, look, it's not going to increase the vaccines in people's arms because it takes a long time to move from just the technical information about how to manufacture a vaccine, that is the patent, to the actual raw materials, to fabricating the vaccine, and then distributing the vaccine and actually injecting it into people's arms. So Big Pharma is a little bit skeptical, and they say that as well, if pharmaceutical companies don't get a reasonable return on their investment, they'll stop innovating. They won't be able to contribute at rapid speed new vaccines for new coronaviruses. So it's a very interesting debate, which reflects the larger debate between role of government, role of the private sector in our economies. Should the private sector make a reasonable profit? How much should the government tax that profit and regulate it, private sector activities? So I have no simple answers. I'm ambivalent. I think it's a great idea that vaccines are widely distributed, particularly to the poor countries, because unless we are all safe from the coronavirus, none of us is safe. So we have to get that vaccine out to every willing person on the planet, not just in our own countries.
And finally, to our Pacifica region, Dr. Stephen, New Zealand Navy. What have they been up to recently in the region?
Well, I've had a long association with the New Zealand Navy. I'm an honorary captain. I've done a lot of lecturing, a lot of sort of public profiling of the Navy, and I'd like to take this opportunity to just indicate what latest copy of a magazine called Navy News has a lot of South Pacific features in it. So let's start with the Kermadec Islands. Here's the ship, the HMNZS Canterbury, up there, bringing supplies, repairing some of the damage from latest earthquakes, making sure that the small contingent of New Zealanders there as in the weather office are well supplied. So that's for starters, and this just indicates that the Navy has done a lot of work in Pacific Islands in disaster relief, in humanitarian assistance. And in fact, the Deputy Chief of Navy, Melissa Ross, recently made a speech at Otaki College, and she stressed the fact that our sailors must be prepared to meet challenges at short notice, to help in disasters, to help our Pacific neighbors, and she specifically mentions Fiji and Tonga, and she could mention quite a lot of others, such as Samoa after one of the tsunami. So the Navy is certainly ready. It also provides scientific backup. As we talked about before, there are a number of buoys circulating in the Pacific Island in the Pacific Ocean to warn about tsunamis, and one of these went adrift. And the ship Aotearoa, the newest ship in the New Zealand Navy, was diverted to near Tonga to pick up this buoy that is drifting aimlessly, to pick it up, bring it back to New Zealand, repair it, and then no doubt reposition it where it can do good work in advanced warning. And then finally, let's just focus on individuals. Here's a lovely story about a woman from Tokelau, Christina Sola. Christina Sola is the first Tokelauan female sailor in the Royal New Zealand Navy. She's a leading communications warfare specialist, and she's been given a whole page in this indicating that Pacific Island people are most welcome in the New Zealand Navy. They're doing great work, and that in future we hope to see not only Pacifica people, but Pacifica women in particular, doing their part, if they wish, in our volunteer Navy, learning skills and contributing their energy to this enterprise. So this is a brief salute to the New Zealand Navy and its good work in the Pacific region.
Dr. Stephen Hoadley, Associate Professor of Politics and International Relations at the University of Auckland's Faculty of Arts, for our weekly look at global politics. Thank you so much, Dr. Stephen, and we'll look forward to your company again next week. Thank you and have a great day.
Thank you, Brian.